left, right, and center, back to send sound waves into your ear where they will, with any luck, stimulate nerve endings within your cochlea, which will transform mechanical energy into neural energy, which gets sent to your brain, allowing you to hear the show. If that isn't happening, you won't be able to hear me right now. This week, the emissions trading scheme under threat, Jedi police officers, and an action plan to combat internet pollution. Left, right, and center, what do we need an army for anyway?
Student radio may contain coarse language and adult content. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the show for another week, folks. This is Left, Right and Centre, and you are listening to Student Radio on 101.5 FM Radio Adelaide.
Or online, if you like to.
You could listen online.
Good night, everyone.
Good morning, you mean?
Well, night,
so you've got to be careful saying good night. It's kind of like goodbye.
Yeah, but everyone's been telling me recently that it isn't actually the next day until you go to sleep. So whereas I would think normally this is Wednesday, because of course it's past the, it's now AM instead of PM.
Shut up, Matteo. What are we talking about this week?
We are going to have a chat about the new defence white paper that's just been released this week. We're going to have a talk about that.
Yeah, we are. Clearly you know what you're talking about, Tim. We're also talking about the emissions trading scheme again, because there's been some follow up there. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But we're also talking about another trading scheme, aren't we, Casey?
Yeah, an exciting new development. Well, new developments on our end that we're going to share with you. The internet reduction scheme we proposed last week.
Mm-hmm.
We're hoping to build some support from that. We'll come back to that a little bit later in the show, I think.
Yep. We're also going to talk about the Insta budgets that we plugged a couple of weeks ago. We've had a couple of submissions in terms of people proposing ideas for budgets.
Well, we've had one viable one that we're going to read out on air.
Yeah, only
in honour of the budget next Tuesday night.
We had many submissions, probably. I think too many to count, probably. Yeah. No, one was really up to scratch.
About a couple hundred, I think.
And as normal, we've also got a great story by one
unnamed person.
Unnamed person.
Call him Mr. X.
Oh, no, don't give away an initial Matteo.
Great Matteo.
Or a gender.
You've revealed the secret identity.
Mr., yeah. Well, I mentioned that we'd be talking about the emissions trading scheme, and that's indeed correct, I believe. Tim, what do you reckon?
Yep. Over the weekend, on Monday morning, rather, Kevin Rudd came out and announced that he would be delaying the emissions trading scheme by a year and also slightly altering the upper bound on one of the emissions cuts targets to 25%, and that's conditioned on international agreement. And this has caused obviously, a bit of a kerfuffle.
Yeah, I think it's important to point out at this sort of juncture that actually, while the upper limit has been increased to 25%, assuming there isn't international agreement, which is completely up in the air at this point, the base rate will stay exactly as it was under the previous, which
So what the system was, without international agreement, the lower bound on the targets was 5% on 2000 levels by 2020. Upper bound was 15%. The government's looking at this, obviously, with an eye to the Copenhagen talks later on this year. And that's a part of what he's saying, is that he wants to bump up that possible rate in terms of giving Australia some level of legitimacy going into these talks.
Mm. I mean, it's not the only mitigating factor that Kevin Rudd has cited. He's also cited the impact of this financial crisis that we're currently in the midst of. But I don't know, this has not exactly been met with a lot of joy.
Matteo, the problem for me is that he's also making arguments about the need for business certainty and investment certainty and all that stuff. And the fact is, this doesn't give it that, because if it's 5% and it could be 25% depending on what happens at Copenhagen, that's not certain.
It's not exactly a small window.
Well, yeah. I think it was interesting in the press conference. I think an interesting omission was that he didn't cite as one of the reasons for his change the political problems that obviously the ETS is facing. You know, he was very careful to omit that. These changes, I think, personally, I think have obviously been geared to making it a little bit easier for the other parties in the Senate to agree to this.
The trouble is, as I understand, it's not, at this point, it hasn't made any difference.
No.
The Greens previously said their minimum was 40% and their upper limit was 60%. They've now refined it down to 25 to 40%, but as it stands, that's not something Labor's going to agree with.
Yeah, and you know, Bob Brown was quite, he did an interview on Late Line last night on the ABC, was quite scathing about it, and he was actually quite specific that the government was actually lining this up as a potential double dissolution trigger. There's been some funny comments of Nick Xenophon, who was had trouble with the original proposals, come out, and his soundbite on this issue was, if you give a lame duck a haircut, it's still a lame duck. So he's obviously not keen. Fielding isn't keen. the Greens aren't happy with it. They're not going to be voting it through. And at the moment, the Coalition are saying, well, if unless there's some serious tinkering with the Act.
Can I backtrack a little? You mentioned Kevin Rudd cited one of the reasons for amending this is the need to go to the Copenhagen talks with some credibility. Does that then imply that he didn't have, he's admitting that he didn't have credibility with the scheme beforehand?
Well, I think, look, if you ask me, he's saying that because he wants some justification to have it passed soon. He wants to be able to get this legislation through within the next couple of months.
And he...
So he's made something less palatable to everyone else.
Well, no, it's slightly more palatable, but, you know, not sufficiently to get it passed.
Yeah, what he's suggesting is that by having the 25%, it's more likely to get passed. And if he can get it passed, then they'll have something to go to with at Copenhagen, whereas as it stands, they're not going to, with the exception of a double dissolution, should that happen, possibly.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things, as you pointed out, that
Bob Brown was talking about that. It was actually quite extraordinary because it's interesting to hear him talk so frankly about the possibility. He was saying, oh, you know, I've been around politics for quite a while. I think his quote was, the chances are 20% and it's increasing rapidly. He thinks they're making all the moves to set up a double dissolution. Which is, you know, Bob Brown was obviously a little bit scathing about that politically, but it's got to be nothing but a win for the Greens if that happens.
It seems all a bit murky, and I guess if we talk briefly again about the political consequences, one of the things that hasn't been pointed out is that this move has gained him more support from business.
Hmm.
And so there are a couple of business lobbies that are actually more positive about it now than they were before.
Also a lot of green movement. So the Australian Conservation Foundation came out yesterday on the step, you know, just in that little courtyard they have at the Parliament House where they do all the interviews with the lobby groups, and they came out also quite in favour. And it's obviously a very interesting discussion. We do deal with it quite a bit, but I think we might leave it there for the moment. The Defence White Paper. On Saturday, having the Australian government released the Defence White Paper, the first one in, I think, 9 years, which is essentially a document that White Paper is essentially the document the government uses to point out, you know, to espouse its policies.
To shape the direction of defence policy going on to the future,
I mean, obviously it can be used for different areas, but this one's obviously the Defence White Paper. This was the details of this have been leaked in various dribs and drabs for the preceding couple of weeks. So the whole thing was leaked to the Australian, I think a fortnight before the actual release date. But I have been slaving away over the 140 pages of this document.
He's not joking. He's read them all.
Yeah, I've been working very hard, Tim.
Yeah, and we're going to have a bit of a talk about that. And one of the interesting, I think, it's quite an interesting document because it spends, you know, the first half sort of musing over the future of Australian political, you know, of Australian strategic policy. And I think one of the interesting points that it makes is, you know, it's since World War II, we haven't really had like a really major interstate conflict. And the point it makes is that sort of dealing with intrastate conflict is going to be the major the theatre of war for the ADF in the future.
The intrastate conflict
between
local
states of Australia. Between agents within one state.
Yeah, for example, non-state actors are generally speaking
and,
a bit about asymmetrical
also
warfare.
Non-state actors from other states. Mm. So part of the reason it's so difficult is that you have states from one... I mean, sorry, actors from one state intervening in action from another state, and therefore it's not simply one country like a traditional civil war, it's multiples.
We're not talking about states like South Australia and Victoria here.
No, we're talking about countries. Okay. Yeah, so it's, you know, it's quite a significant... I mean, obviously it's the first white paper in 9 years, which is something the government was very critical of with the Howard years, because essentially this is something that Joel Fitzgibbon, the Defence Minister, commissioned the moment he got into office. He said, we need a defence white paper to sort out what we're doing. And it's drawn a bit of attention, obviously, because it's got some very significant spending plans for the Defence Force, especially in this time where the government's budget is under quite a bit of pressure, and we'll talk more about that next week. It's drawn quite a bit of attention, you know, with major spending plans for especially the Navy and the Air Force under the current plan.
It's certainly helping someone's economy. I mean, what are we pretty much replacing our submarine fleet?
Yeah, that's, you know, there's at the moment we have 6 Collins-class subs, and they're going to be replaced by 12 new, like, future subs is what the government is calling them.
Surely Mike Rann will be happy about that one.
Yeah, well, the white paper says they're all to be built in South Australia. But there's obviously some questions here. I mean, What do we think that the Australian Defence Force's priorities should be in the period up to 2030? Does anybody have any strong opinions on that one?
Well, I'm not going to disagree with the paper at all when it said that it's the highest priority for the Australian Defence Force up to 2030 is to ensure the defence of Australia from direct attack.
I'm going to disagree with you.
You're going to disagree, Casey.
I think the highest
probability for the Defence Force in the next 30 years...
The highest responsibility of
the Defence Force is to disband, go their separate ways... Okay. So that we don't need a defence force, do we?
Casey, we can come back to that argument. Can I briefly say, Matteo, the only problem I have with the defence white paper, is, from what I've seen of it thus far, is that it talks about the defence of Australia, right?
Yeah.
And the trouble is, that's an established policy. That's not something new, and I wonder whether...
Yeah, well, the document's quite... I mean, it does go... You know, I think, essentially, it's paying lip service to the idea of protecting Australia from direct attack, because it does also quite explicitly say we see the likelihood of that such an attack as being extremely small over the next 20 years.
What do we have that people want to attack?
Look, they say you know, an attack on Australia is extremely small, right? But the spending they've been doing, a lot of that stuff is the response to Defence of Australia. Defence of Australia, the policy basically says that you should be able to block off like avenues towards Australia from attack by use of aircraft, submarines, Navy, and that's exactly what's being invested in. So it seems to me that if that's perhaps, you know, one of the most unlikely directions, you know, for threats, strategic threats facing Australia, investment might have been better spent in other things, such as the ability to deal with peacekeeping operations, which isn't something that's been discounted entirely, but something that maybe hasn't been stressed enough, because that sort of threat does create threats for Australia.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. But, you know, this is one of these issues with defence spending, and obviously it becomes quite a political issue. I mean, the Bob Brown came out, and I think it has, you know, at a time, he said, this is a quote, "At a time where there is no military threat to Australia, the $22 billion annual budget we already provide is adequate." And a lot of people are, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, this is defence. Australia isn't under any imminent threat. At the moment, the primary use of our, you know, military is getting involved in wars that a lot of people don't think are valid.
Yeah. And this seems to a good point to reignite the point Casey started before. But
I've been shut down.
On that, can I say the trouble with what Bob Brown said as a way of starting this debate is that prior to 2001, who would have predicted that the United States would have been invading Afghanistan in the next 2 years?
Prior to there being a reason for the US to invade Afghanistan, who would have predicted that?
If the US had said, "No, there are no threats. We can disband our army," what would have and they'd had. What would have happened?
Well, it would have been a much smaller scale attack on New York, because there would be that the terrorists would know that there would be no way for the US to retaliate. Mm. So they would not need to attack as hard.
Hold on. They knew that the Americans couldn't retaliate as effectively, so they'd lessen the scale of their attack.
Because a smaller attack, they're not going to have the means to retaliate. They're not going to need to.
Then hold on. What?
No, I think I do understand maybe what Casey's
saying.
I'm phrasing
it badly, but you know what I get.
I think perhaps what he's saying is that with a smaller military presence, perhaps overseas in there would just be less grounds for
sort of grievances from these people.
Yeah. No.
Why
no,
do I want to attack someone that I don't doesn't
that for the most part anyway, be they the great Satan, still are keeping things sort of in house for the time being. But it didn't happen that way.
I think the point is, you can't... Look, Bob Brown says there are no direct threats, right? There's no threat now. But you can't predict whether there's going to be a threat in 1 year, 2 years, 5 years. And to just disband your military is not practical.
I'll come back to my previous point. Why would anyone attack us? We're a friggin' big desert at the very bottom of the earth. There's nothing here anyone wants.
We have quite a lot of raw minerals, which a lot of countries want, for example.
Yeah. I think, you know, obviously... Casey, you make the point, but what my belief is, and this is the main reason why I'm almost always opposed to cuts in defence spending and almost always in favour of increases, I think this is for the most part, I think the White Paper is an incredible document. It's the second piece of decent governing the Rudd government has done after the broadband plan, if you ask me, what my humble opinion.
And we always do.
Yeah. Well, actually, Tim, in a few minutes we might...
We'll see. But what I think is the overriding principle with defence spending that has to be that when you're spending money on especially large defence projects like developing a new submarine, commissioning a new class of warfare destroyer, buying fighter jets, the money that you're spending now, it's not as though if a threat were to become substantial, you would be able to just bring in a new class of submarines or bring
It's a 100 fighter aircraft. It's a long-term investment, but I think...
But if we don't use them, then we're just wasting these submarines.
Yeah, but the point is...
Casey, I'd make the point that if we don't use them, as in if we don't engage in combat, that's not a waste because the investment in military technology provides a deterrent. It acts as a deterrent against attack. Yeah. And more to the point, I feel that by paying taxes and living in a country... the government has an obligation to protect me from attack by other states.
Sure.
And therefore, a military is a requirement. At least, maybe not the case of Switzerland, for instance, but...
So you're saying disband the country and not pay taxes?
I'm saying if I'm going to pay taxes, I expect a military.
I think one of the points Casey would make is wouldn't a lot of these taxes be better spent helping those who are disadvantaged in our society? Which I think in some circumstances is a fair point.
A lot of circumstances, it's a fair point. When is that point alone? But when it has to be taken in context with other spending, when
you can't. Have to be made. A couple of weeks ago, I announced in my budget that I was giving $120 billion to everything.
Including defence.
But the fact is, that's not realistic. I think spending plans have to be, you have to think about a range of interests. Even Bob Brown, Casey, is not arguing as you are that we should spend no money on defence. He's arguing that $22 billion is sufficient. Do you reject Bob Brown's proposal?
I would say that, and I would not say that we need to decrease defence spending. No, I was being a bit facetious then.
I thought so.
Yeah. But just back on your budget for a second, your model budget, yours was still maybe feasible because your deficit there actually turns out to be likely less than President Obama's deficit for his budget. yours was a $1.6 trillion.
For those of you who don't know, last week, two weeks ago, Chris put together his ideal budget, where essentially he maxed out spending and had zero taxes, which left him with a $1.6 trillion deficit.
However, the US is looking to a $1.7 trillion deficit.
Barack Obama.
Conor Oberst and the Mystic Valley Band from the album that was released today, Outer South, that was 10 Women.
A favourite of yours, Case? I saw it this afternoon. You were just unwrapping it for its packaging.
A favourite artist of mine.
You're not really sure about this new record?
It'll grow on me.
Yeah, it will grow on you.
It's not entirely been written by him, so it's kind of he's written two-thirds of the songs and some of the band have written the other songs, and the ones that the band have written are not that good.
And you can't help but feel they sort of drag it down a little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Last week, on the show, we talked about Pete Blasina's report from Sunrise. I'll play you a little bit of it now just as a recap. Basically, he was saying how the internet's filling up.
The internet's about 5,000 days old, about 13 years old, and it hasn't broken down once in that time. So it's probably the most perfect machine we've built as humans. The thing is that when we built it, it was never meant to cope with what's happening now, and it was never meant to grow as rapidly as it has. Okay. And with video down there, going down the internet and so much entertainment, social networking, it's just at capacity, virtually at capacity now.
Now, we were quite concerned to hear this last week.
Yeah, it's all that entertainment and social networking.
I'd have to say, if anything, our concern has only grown since then.
Yeah, well, we found out I found quotes from the AT&T, I've forgotten his title, it was the head of legal something-something at AT&T.
He was very important.
Yeah.
He does sound important, the head of legal something-something.
Yeah, I've forgotten the title, unfortunately. So we've decided that we need to do something about it. Mm-hmm. Last week we proposed... and advocated Internet Pollution Reduction Scheme.
That was my idea.
I
think it was mine.
It was a collective idea, group idea. I'd like to claim a little bit of credit as well.
I'd like to claim all the credit. It's a cap and trade system, effectively. So businesses get their certain number of permits.
Private citizens
get their permits. You're not allowed to exceed that number. Well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, basically, you need to use the permits you've got.
We have to re-stress this, because what's going to happen is the internet will become full, right? And that means that everything that's on there will be able to stay, but anything...
We can't fit anything more on there.
Else can fit on. So we have there has to be a disincentive to put things on and leave them there, and an incentive to take them off.
Mm.
And so this might all sound like a bit of a harebrained scheme, but we've actually had some research commissioned by... a bit of a policy wonk in the area.
Crack researcher for left, right and centre.
Yeah.
Who also happens to be a big fan of the show.
Yeah, he listens every week.
Which is very helpful.
We commissioned a green paper from him.
Yeah, and really he's done a fantastic job with it.
He's done a great job. Michael's written up a policy not a policy. He's written up a paper advocating...
Green paper.
A green paper.
It is a policy document.
It's not really... it's available on the Student Radio blog at the moment, studentradio.wordpress.com. Scroll down until you see our post from last week. It's available on there. Also up there, we've collected from the experts tips for reducing your internet usage at home to reduce, reuse, and recycle your internet.
And actually, I'd like to announce, in honour of that, that the show's going to end at 12:45 this week. We're going to cut it short by 15 minutes, and that way we will do our bit to reduce the internet, because then that means the podcast will only be half an hour, you see.
Well, not sure you can leave the studio if you like, but we'll keep going.
Chris speaking for us here.
What we could do is wind the clocks back.
Yeah.
Or forward.
Tim, that won't actually help.
Would the show will have ended at 12:45?
No, but it won't make any practical difference.
Maybe if we use Nepal's time zone.
Isn't that weird? Isn't that a bit funny?
Anyway, that's a different story.
The point is this is a really serious issue, and we need substantial
changes here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In government policy, what we need the community to do is take action.
And we want you to write to the minister in question,
write to your politicians, write to the minister, which is Stephen Conroy, Minister for the Broadband Communications and the Digital Economy.
Exactly.
And write a letter and say, you know, this is a serious problem. What are you going to do about it?
And if you're not sure what you could write, we can help you out there.
Yeah, we've prepared a pro forma letter. We've set up a campaign headquarters website at IPRS.wordpress.com.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, shortly that letter will go up on there because computers are crashing on me everywhere.
I think it's the internet filling up, Casey. Yeah. It's filling up.
It's demonstrating just how limited a resource it is.
First of all, one of you, if you've got a website out there and you're not using it, delete that so that Casey can put his
phone number. Maybe give me a call before you do so I can get in there quickly and take up that space.
Yeah.
I need to be able to get that document on the internet so that people can read it. But at the moment, there's a very brief outline of what we're trying to do at IPRS.wordpress.com, and that'll keep you up. That's very much under construction. We'll keep updating that as we go.
But please, guys, any domains, URLs that you are not using, please, for the benefit of everyone, please do take them offline.
Mm. Well, and eventually, of course, you will be given internet credits with which to do with this once our underground campaign, hopefully
the government will take notice. We need it. That's why we need politicians. We need everyone's support behind this.
Well, because we can't stress how important this is, because, of course, we're more or less the internet generation. We've grown up with it.
And I guess another thing that people could maybe do is actually draw up a list of websites that we think are worthless and unimportant,
FaceBase?
That's not a real website, Tim. I'm sorry.
It's one of those social networking ones.
I was thinking more like todaytonight.com.au, or that might actually maybe 7.com.au/TT or /todaytonight.
I guess au.yahoo.com/lifestyle/TV/
Okay, todaytonight. We can just delete the whole Yahoo 7 website, and that'll get rid of, that'll free up a lot of space, I think.
Please tell me that isn't the actual URL. Okay,
something like that. That's the Sunrise one, because I've been looking at it a lot.
Yahoo 7. It's yahoo7.com.au/ Something
anyway, so yeah, maybe so maybe compile a list of websites we can write to say, would you mind just kind of shutting up shop?
Is that something that us and listeners should suggest in any letters they include? Just suggest websites that
maybe not to politicians. Maybe they could write to the websites
or to ISPs, perhaps.
Well, please go offline for the group.
We would like you to be internet neutral. We want internet content neutrality. Yeah.
That's a good phrase, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be possible to get to purchase internet offsets?
I don't know. We'll have to investigate.
For every usage, you can pay some money so that a server farm is set up somewhere.
Mm. Yeah.
I think we might need to commission a white paper outlining specific policy measures.
Absolutely. Well, that's the next step after a green paper.
Well, of course, this is ongoing. Don't think that left, right, and centre are just going to fall off the wagon here and just stop after a couple of weeks.
Drop the ball on this issue, Kate.
Yeah. No, this is huge.
We will certainly be coming back to this. What are action items for this week, then? Action items that people can do. So we've got write to your politicians. We've got...
Drop a
list of websites you don't think are useful. We've got
free up your own web space. I guess go onto your student email and delete all of them. Yeah. Like, because I've got 1,900 emails in my inbox.
You should really help to contribute. If you're not part of the solution, Christopher, you're part of the problem.
I am then part of the problem, Tim. Mm-hmm.
See, I don't have a face space, so I'm already like leagues ahead of you guys.
So basically, internet neutral already, Tim.
Yeah, Tim.
You may in fact
almost be internet neutral.
Yes,
that's
probably true.
And just leave your suggestions of websites or on the IPRS website. If you
there are no comments yet set up on there, but hopefully I'll get that up in the next day because
again, dependent on space,
dependent on the internet working.
But what you can do is you can leave it on our Facebook
group, as long as that still works. So I've been able to get on that. On Facebook/FaceBase, the group is left, right, and centre, or on the Student Radio website at studentradio.wordpress.com.
You can drop us an email, probably.
All right. Left, front, and centre at live.com.au.
Yeah.
So what have we got now?
Casey,
we
have something for us.
This. Unemployed Algerian chemist Sinoun Diafala has been sentenced to 9 years in prison on 4 counts of contaminating food after he sprayed a mixture of his own urine and feces on objects at British supermarket chains Tesco and Morrison's in 2008. It caused a total of $1.4 million in damages. Diafala was also convicted of spraying children's books at a Waterstones, a pub in Gloucestershire, and was further sentenced to a 12-month jail term for possession of a catapult. Police say that the 42-year-old, who holds a degree in industrial chemistry, was also in possession of stockpiles of the mixture and plans to spread it in cities such as Bristol and Birmingham. Guys, which concerns you more, this or swine flu?
I'm pretty concerned about this. How does one cause $1.4 million worth of damage to food?
Am I talking in this week's Rapid Fire News?
No, Mateo, shut up.
As long as you don't break the rules, I think.
Okay, yeah, no, we'll you're on probation. I think you're on probation, and if you break them this time, bang.
How did this Algerian chemist have a catapult? Did he make it in his own backyard?
Well, he was an industrial chemist, so he's a clever man. I think he made it in his own... I think maybe he was going to shoot the mixture over on things. The trouble for me is, Tim, I actually know how he caused all this damage. I mean, apparently he was just spraying everything higgledy-piggledy, but he probably also sprayed some Italian truffles, and they're worth $1,000 each.
Those Italian truffles.
Have you seen them in a certain food court in Adelaide?
I have. No, I've tried a few.
$1,000 per one.
Do they sell any?
Yeah, they have one in a big box.
I'm a common customer, yeah.
Mm. Tim, I do like my $1,000 truffles.
Not if they're covered with urine and feces.
Is this why you didn't give me a birthday present last year?
Yeah, I decided. No, what could I do? Could I give a birthday present?
No, don't talk to me.
Well, I don't think I got you a birthday present.
Student radio. Whoops.
A Swedish church started its Easter Sunday Mass by unveiling a life-size statue of Jesus made entirely out of Lego. Parishioners at the Unstergreiter Church in Visteris, which is 110 kilometres from Stockholm, reportedly donated approximately 30,000 Lego bricks so that the 1.78-metre-high statue could be built. The model is based on a work by 19th-century Danish sculptor Bertel Thorvaldsen, which depicts the resurrection of Jesus Christ. The statue is exactly 1.78 metres high and was described as life-size. Can we now say that Jesus Christ was 1.78 metres tall? Does this have theological implications, Tim?
No. I think this is what I like about this is that the only thing that could make Lego more awesome is Jesus. So I'm happy with that.
So is Jesus less than 1.78 metres high, in which case, in this case, Lego is bigger than Jesus?
The Bible has no specific details about the height of Jesus.
Is that then something that this Lego statue might contribute to the theological canon?
I'm pretty sure it's not part of the canon.
I think this explains where all my childhood Lego's gone.
We have non-canon Bible here, do we?
I think we do. This is the
Italian Prime Minister and owner of Italian television and friend of the show, Silvio Berlusconi, has nominated a selection of young female celebrities to stand for election to European Parliament in June. Reportedly, none of the candidates, which included a Big Brother star and a former Miss Italy contestant, have any political experience. Now, Berlusconi's wife has reportedly said she intends to divorce him after this latest incident. Does it serve him right?
I think it does.
Well, hasn't actually Silvio said that, no, that's it, this is the final straw, I've been married to this woman for 19 years, but I don't like the way she's treated me this time.
Yeah.
I can't see a reconciliation.
Silvio Berlusconi is one of those excellent European characters.
Excellent is precisely what he is, Tim. I mean, after all, we only make the excellent friends of the show.
Yes. No, normally you think it's illegal for a man to pretty much own a country, but Berlusconi seems to pull it off.
Well, what was the quip you actually heard about?
I was just going to say, the thing about this is the four contestants, some of the celebrities who are meant to be running were also pictured in a photograph a couple of years ago, where, and he's 73 or something, and he was sort of sitting on a beach outside one of his villas, with four of them, and they were called Berlusconi's harem, and I just don't understand how the marriage survived as long as it did. This is ridiculous.
Basically, we all want to be Silvio Berlusconi when we grow up.
I don't want to be 73.
You know, what?
I don't want to be that old yet. I want to live that long. I don't just want to be him now.
You're telling me when you're 70... No,
when I'm 73, I'll be fine.
No, when you're 73, you don't want to own Italy.
I think Chris...
Italy's a crumbling country.
I think Chris hopes to die before he gets old.
Yeah, but it's crumbling because you're in charge.
I'm not in charge. Silvio Berlusconi's in charge.
Next,
that's the problem.
Next.
The Yowie has been blamed for the
Can
death
I just
of...
Can I say, he broke the rules by saying, jeez.
The Yowie has been blamed for the death of a dog in the Top End, according to a leading crypto-naturalist. Yowie researcher Andrew McGinn told the Northern Territory News the dog's violent death could be the work of the Bigfoot-like Australian beast. However, Tim the Yowie Man, a former economist turned Yowie researcher and nut following an apparent sighting of a hairy beast 15 years ago, said he was concerned that the Yao is being unfairly portrayed as an aggressive creature. Tim told the Northern Territory News, "In the over 150 years of Yowie reports all over Australia, I've never heard of a Yowie ripping an animal's head off. To speculate, with a lack of conclusive evidence to back the claims, that the decapitation of this poor puppy was the work of a Yowie is alarmist." McGinn said that there have been only a handful of Yowie reports from the Territory in the past 15 years. One turned out to be a hairy, naked human running across the Sturt Highway near Alice Springs, he said. So, guys, what's the cause of the Yowie's newfound aggression? Global warming, the financial crisis, what's the explanation?
Tim, what about the National Broadband Network?
No, Tim, you never told us you were such a talented
I am in no way associated with this character.
There's something you're withholding from us.
But hold on, Tim, you've said you like running naked around Northern Territory, right?
This is just completely outrageous lies.
So maybe you are both the naked man who was thought to be a Yowie and the Yowie, and being a naked man pretending to be the Yowie was actually a cover for the fact that you are the Yowie. That's the perfect crime.
And here was us thinking that you didn't have any time left over after all that eating and sleeping. And here you are running around the Sturt Highway.
I'm so upset right now.
An Adelaide Hills man was arrested on suspicion of drunk driving after being seen trying to order food from a closed McDonald's restaurant. Police saw the man attempting to order through the drive-thru of the closed Mount Barker restaurant at approximately 1:30 a.m. on Sunday morning. They said that the 50-year-old appeared to be affected by alcohol and immediately disqualified the man's driver's license for 12 months when he refused the breath test. He was furthermore charged with refusing to give his name and address and will appear at the Mount Barker Magistrates Court at a later date. It's hard to deny this man was drunk, but I think the major misunderstanding here is that he tried to order food from McDonald's, guys.
Well, from a closed McDonald's. I mean, how drunk do you have to be when you go up to a drive-thru and are not aware that there's nobody there?
I think the fact that there was no one there is actually a good thing because he'd be less embarrassed.
Well, I mean, it turns out it's become national news and we down here have found out about it. But apparently Mount Barker haven't, you know, they don't yet enjoy all the benefits of the 24-hour McDonald's restaurants. And bad luck for them. Let's hope that one day, you know, they get the 24-hour ones.
Someday civilization comes to Mount Barker.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it'll be a while yet.
I wouldn't joke about it, Casey. It's a serious concern.
No, McDonald's actually explains most social phenomena. I mean, for instance...
Oh, yep.
The McDonald's theory of international relations.
That is not a real theory.
No, which states that countries which have McDonald's in them are unlikely to attack each other because of commercial and economic interest. See, I think you could make a case for the McDonald's theory of civilization, social development.
Hey, can I just ask, do art students have anything useful to contribute, or is it just theories like that?
This isn't an art student theory. This is a theory that was conceived by a renowned and influential international relations scholar. Tim.
Yeah, no, see, I actually liked it. That was good.
I'm bored now. Let's do this. London tabloid The Sun has reported that Prince Harry admitted to his army mate that he hasn't washed his hair for 2 years. The 24-year-old royal apparently confessed his stinky secret after his army mates teased him about his ginger mop. Celebrating with fellow rookie pilots after completing phase one of their army air corps training, Harry and his friends headed to the nearby Tally Ho pub. The prince was overheard bragging that he would not change his look for anyone before claiming he was short of beer money. Guys?
I think what we need to do? We need to ask what Matteo thinks, because Matteo really likes this story.
This is a spectacular non-story. I
think the key word there, Matteo, is spectacular. This is a spectacular story. Spectacular.
This is the least...
No. Prince Harry needed to ask for beer money. He's got plenty of money himself.
We're not on him.
No, Prince Harry is cheap. That's what this is saying. Prince Harry is cheap. He doesn't want to pay for shampoo. He has to ask for beer money. This man should be taken out and given...
So basically,
basically
you're saying that he should have his hair washed.
He should have to pay for the shampoo.
So you're saying that this man should not be England's next king?
Well, he's not going to be England's next king.
Exactly.
Prince William will be.
Exactly.
I'm saying he shouldn't be the next king after Prince William.
No, this is so dumb. This is not a story at all. This is just not news.
It is news, but whatever. A Scottish cop has allegedly admitted to using Jedi mind tricks to extract information from suspects and said in an interview that she thinks all police officers should be Jedis. The 45-year-old police officer, Pam Fleming, further explained that there were other Jedi, as many as 8, in Strathkilde Police. Fleming, who was reportedly judged sound enough to teach a probationer, has even taken to calling him her Padawan, adding that, "I'm not sure he likes that." If Jedi mind tricks can be used in interviews, should we be concerned that they might start using their powers to influence what suspects say and do?
I am actually worried that this is going to replace torture as the main technique used by the FBI to interrogate terrorists. They'll be able to make them say anything they like.
Jedi mind tricks.
Jedi mind tricks. Using the force, yeah.
Does all it take to be legally recognised as a Jedi is to just put Jedi down on your census.
Well, no, I think the police officer in this case did, so perhaps so.
I think the Force has to be have a particular strength.
Yeah, the Force has to have a particular strength in that one, and you also have to believe. Okay, so you have to have a genuine belief in it, and
it have a genuine belief in you.
I suppose that's right.
Well, so I'm going to try when the next census.
Look, it's not
around.
Purely about what you put on the census, Mateo.
Well, if you write it, they'll then...
You're one of those really, really annoying people who, I'm going to be really funny, I'm going to put Jedi on the census. Well, it's an important document for national policy planning.
I'm really, really, really funny, but this is just going to be one of the many facets of my humour.
The Galactic Council doesn't just consider you because you put down Jedi on your census.
That's
they don't consider you for Jedi.
That's a good point, Casey.
They certainly won't consider you if you don't put down Jedi.
That's not true. Look at the case of the probationer who had to go through being a Padawan. You're, if you just put that on the census, you're not going to go through that.
Just as an update, we've managed to find some space on the internet. We've put up that pro forma letter.
Thanks to whoever deleted their internet stuff.
Yeah, whoever
stuff.
That was, thanks a lot. The entire website is still a work in progress, though. It's not quite finished. There's some information still to go up. We might put some diagrams up explaining what's going on. But the letter at least is there, so you can fire that off to your local politicians. Now, what are we doing? We're doing...
We're going to try and do this.
Unfortunately, here we go.
Hi, I'm Miriam Robin, one of the sub-editors for the University of Adelaide student newspaper, Ondi. I was very concerned to hear about the problem of internet pollution and that, as a result, the internet may be full as soon as 2012. Take the case of 14-year-old Jimmy Johnson. He spent his typical afternoons online, whiling away the hours playing World of Warcraft with his friends. Here, in the sanctuary of his room, he is safe from his drug-addled mother and abusive, petty criminal father. Without a functioning internet, Jimmy will slip through the cracks. His studies will suffer, he will starve, and eventually he will fall into a life of crime. Please, I urge you, push for a less polluted internet so that Jimmy can pass on to his children the internet that he relies on today. Write to your local politician and demand action on this issue. Visit IPRS.wordpress.com for more information.
That's IPRS.com. No, it's not at all. IPRS.wordpress.com for more information.
That's a sad, sad story there about poor old Jimmy.
Yeah.
Puts a human face on this issue, I think.
I think it does, and I really think the case of those like Jimmy is a serious one and not one to be joked about.
And one that maybe the government should take into account when they hand down their second federal budget next Tuesday.
Indeed, and we asked for some requests, and we mentioned that only one had been deemed good enough to talk about.
Yeah, there was a little flash game, very serious little flash game, on news.com.au.
Simulator.
A budget simulator. You can design your own federal budget. We all did ours a couple of weeks ago. We asked for... For suggestions, we're gonna look at one that someone sent in. This is Dominic's Insta budget. First of all, what Dominic's done? He's raised his taxes.
Oh dear,
big mistake.
Problem.
You should be cutting taxes.
I have no ideological opposition to the raising of taxes.
Let's see what else he's done. He's raised spending on education to $80 billion a year.
Honestly, that's hideous, Dominic. No good.
He spent $80 billion on fuel and energy.
No, I approve of that.
That's important.
Renewable energy comes under that banner as well, so that's I approve of that one. He spent $75 billion on health.
Well, look, I think private health care is the answer. I don't think we should be spending public money on that.
Chris, don't be joking. You're being flippant.
He spent $5 billion on defence.
What a disgrace, I gotta say.
Look,
this is clearly some pinko pacifist.
I think $5 billion. Well, that will buy you a couple of kayaks at most.
Yeah.
A couple of high tech kayaks, but kayaks nonetheless.
Yeah. Well, what about your minesweeping capabilities? Kayaks. Look, we can take on New Zealand.
We can't though. The mines would actually sink the kayaks. The kayaks probably couldn't. You couldn't have mine. You know. Perception technique, like you couldn't pick up the mines and they'd blow up, and then we'd have $5 billion spent on kayaks wasted.
Never really understood that game.
How expensive would it be to get to fill our army with Jedi?
Depends how many people identify as such on the next census.
Well, we can find that out. It isn't official,
isn't we should that? Have conscription for all people who put Jedi on their census. That'll stop you.
And actually, the government has been having problems, filling up getting enough people to run submarines, for instance, and warships. If we did that,
Obviously, if under Dom's plan, we would only have a couple of kayaks, so, you know.
That would take four people.
No problem crewing them.
No.
On Social Security, Dominic's spent $120 billion.
Wow, that's a lot of money.
Well, that's about $120 billion too much, I think.
I think it's nowhere near enough. Mm. I think he should have spent, a couple trillion.
In Dominic's defence here, I actually...
A bazillion dollars on welfare.
Guys, the simulation game only allows $120 billion in each category.
That's a very good point.
Otherwise, I would have spent more in all.
Yeah. If you'd been allowed that, you would have spent, I guess, an infinite amount of money?
Yes.
Yes, okay. And $40 billion on petty cash for Dominic.
I would have liked more in there.
Nice little slush fund there.
I would have liked a bigger slush fund, Dominic. You know, I mean, I would have expected $40 billion just coming my way.
You write this off as a slush fund. I think it's an important investment for those projects that you need to spend money on during the year that can't be foreseen during the budget.
Every 3 years, Casey.
Your polls are looking a bit down.
It is true that the project does come up every 3 years or so, probably.
I'd say I don't really understand hate, Dom. I think you've made a very good budget. Solid.
Absolutely, me too.
It's feasible, which is important.
Maybe we'll compare it to next week's federal budget when it gets handed out by Mr. Wayne Swan. Yeah. The Honourable Wayne Swan?
But we'll see perhaps if the federal government has taken cues not only from Dom's but actually from our budget.
Yeah,
I could see it happening.
So, what have we got now?
This.
Hindenburg, Concorde, Titanic, artichoke. Four words awash with differences. Four words which have absolutely nothing in common, except one thing. One thing which these four words have in common. One thing which binds these words together as a group of four words, rather than as a simple collection of words, of which there merely happen to be four. And that thing, which is what connects these four words together, is this. They all begin with consonants, except artichoke. And this is the focus of this section tonight. Consonants. The unsung heroes of the alphabet. For it is they who prevent even the shortest of words from collapsing into a sort of vowely mash like aya or eu. Yes, it's thanks to consonants that we have our most distinguished words, like indefatigable and distinguished, and even our shorter bitey words, like tram and stay. Even mediocre words can be improved by consonants. For example, aul becomes amarok, and ye becomes distillery. But consonants can also become our enemies, as I'm sure Natalie Bassingthwaite would readily agree. Another thing she, or even someone else, might agree with is how irritating it is when you buy a jumper which fits properly in the store, but somehow apparently unaccountably gains inches in width and length during the journey home. Honestly, how is it possible for a piece of clothing to fit in the store but not outside it? And for $40, you expect better. I mean, I work hard for my money, and I don't appreciate being shortchanged by unfriendly department stores who can't stock clothes with a consistent size. Anyway, I seem to have strayed somewhat from my original, Anyway, consonants. They're pretty good, but let's not forget vowels, the unsung heroes of the alphabet. For without them, words would just collapse into a sort of consonant-y mash, like gjk or bfnt. Yes, vowels, responsible for giving us such words as esophagus and elephantine. But when it comes down to it, the best words are mixes of both vowels and consonants, like gregarious and awful, Feliciano, Dakota, and celery. These words are truly the cream of the word appreciator's lexicon, and rarely do we stop to think of this brave pairing solely responsible for our alphabet. In fact, our entire written history... Excuse me. Hello. Yes, yeah, what? Yes, this is he. Really? All of it? All of it? Yeah, excuse me, someone's stolen my car.
It's pretty much time for us to vamoose.
Vamoose.
That's the word I appreciate.
I appreciate that word.
I would have to look that word up in the OED before.
You've never heard the word vamoose?
Can we perhaps assume for a moment it's in the OED, Tim?
No.
Instead of you giving us a hard time about it.
No.
Look, they have a right to be innocent. They're innocent until proven guilty, Tim. They're innocent of existing until proven guilty of not existing.
We're linguistic pioneers is what we are. We never like finishing
the show. Anyway, the point
is... you guys know a word that's guilty of not existing? Extrajuice. Also outrajuice. Tim, not words.
Tim, who's said those words?
Oh, bugger.
Oh, dear, Tim.
Anyway. I use the evil words.
Yeah.
Before we do go, I'd just like to one last time encourage you to take action to send a letter to your local politician by visiting iprs.wordpress.com, also by visiting studentradio.wordpress.com and reading the tips you can use to reduce your internet
pollution.
And as an aside there, it's encouraging to me that the word internet's used as a noun, and I don't know what the word is. I'm not a linguist.
Verb? Is that the word?
No.
To internet?
No, that's interneting.
Interneting? So you don't know what word you were trying to find?
Yeah, that was a bit of a rat hole, wasn't it?
I think, that's really, shame. Casey, we shouldn't have done that. We should have taken Tim's advice and extrajuiced ourselves.
I'm going to outrajuice myself. My name is Casey, and I've been Casey.
I've been Timothy.
I'm going to say goodnight to everyone. I'm Mateo.
I'm Chris.
And that's all. Visit the website studentradio.wordpress.com or email us at leftrightandcentre@live.com.au. Cha-cha!